Good morning. I'd like to call to order the meeting, the committee meeting of Legislative Affairs, Research, and Innovation. Kathy, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Robert Boyd.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Rachel Chavez. Raquel, I apologize. Board Chair Mark Strauss.
Here.
Committee Chair Sherilyn Muir.
Here. Mr. Blakemore, would you please confirm that appropriate notices of this meeting have been provided?
Madam Chair, appropriate notice pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act have been provided, and you do have a quorum.
Good, thank you. May I have a motion to approve the committee agenda as proposed?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the May 28th, 2015 committee meeting?
So moved.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion's approved. This is always the nice part, is to welcome our university advisory committee, and this is always in the spirit of shared governance. Deborah Hallizer and Dr. Dan Gebo. Is Dr. Gebo? Oh, there you are. Okay, usually you're over there. You moved. Do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Of course I do.
Good, I'm glad.
Good morning, everyone. The University Advisory Committee has been meeting, and we've been talking about campus concerns representing all of our constituencies. And at the risk of being a broken record, you know that I always talk about the campus concern about pensions and the threats to employees' pensions and the impetus to have another wave of retirements come January 1st with the change in the actuarial calculations. The chief impact of that is the impending loss of really valuable researchers and teachers and staff throughout the university. And I know that this is a concern that Professor Gebo has spoken about often. As you look at the critical faculty who win awards, who are getting grants, many of them are the very people we might be losing in a wave of retirements. So we're concerned about this. We're also concerned about the potential loss of senior mentors for junior faculty researchers and teachers. So I know that this is something over which the board has very little influence. The council presidents do plan to be writing some quasi-political letters to legislators around the state about the financial status and the effect on universities. And so be prepared for that. We will copy you on the letters that we send.
Thank you. Mr. Gebo? I think in response to Deborah, what you were just talking about, I think it is important that you continue to go on the record. I think you know that this university and certainly this board has done everything humanly and even more so possible. We certainly understand the implications. I think the genesis of this committee is to address the value and the place of research. And in order to do that research, you have to have senior people. So if nothing else, I hope this committee is an embodiment of the principles of retaining the most senior of staff and the most learned of faculty. And the issues of the financial issues of the state of Illinois, we just need to keep pounding away. So we encourage your communication, and we also encourage you to continue to go on the record on this issue. Thank you. This is the point where the chair may recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Blakemore, have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
Madam Chair, we have not received any request at all to address this meeting.
Okay, thank you. Before we begin our meeting, I'd like to make just a few comments and perhaps taking the opportunity to expand on the comment that I just made about the importance of this committee. the fact that we are a standing committee, I think, is a reflection of the commitment of this university and this Board of Trustees to the critical aspect of research. I had the pleasure of hosting a luncheon this week with President Baker and Provost and Jerry and Catherine Squires, who is the president of the foundation. And the purpose of that luncheon was to talk about the integration of research as it relates to foundation opportunities and as it relates to corporate giving. The university has done an extraordinary job over the years with personal giving and personal philanthropy. We continue to have great opportunities with corporate giving and foundation giving. And so sitting down, breaking some bread, and being able to talk at the highest level of how do we continue to break down silos, which I think, President Baker, that is one of your goals, continuing to breaking down silos and not talking about foundation giving, corporate giving, in a vacuum, but relating it back to what is the academic activity that is taking place at this university and what are the academic opportunities that we have to go forward. I am delighted to be able to partner with Mr. Blasey, and this is his first meeting as our formal liaison to this committee, and we look forward to continuing to bring the message of research. And in the spirit of research, the structure of this committee is that we would like to address in depth, rather than superficially, various topics that we might flip from committee meeting to committee meeting, as we did last year. We are committed to taking various aspects of this university. And we looked at the social sciences last year in depth. And this year, I think we are looking at physics, is that correct, in depth. One of the hallmarks of this university and a reputation that precedes us, I think, in terms of the excellent work we've done in physics. And Jerry will speak to that issue and some of the extraordinary things that are happening in this particular area of study. But we have to keep our feet on the ground, and we have to keep touching earth and stay out of our towers as we talk about research, but to look at the practicality, not only of the practicality of application of some of the research that happens here and the innovations as part of this committee, the innovations that come from this university, but we have to relate that to funding. And we're looking at both federal and state funding, and so Mike Mann will have some comments, and I hope for Mr. Mann's sake, sometime in the future, positive news will come forth, because it must be a burden for you to come and tell us of the state of legislation in Illinois. And Dr. Ann Quiter is reaching out to us by Skype, and we'll have a presentation to talk about activities on a federal level. And there's printed information items on broadband and healthcare initiatives at NIU. So, having said all this, let's get to the presentation. So, I think first on our agenda is Mike Mann to give us a state legislative update.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, Mr. President. That's a tall order. The good news part of it. I'll do what I can. Today is day 58 of the budget impasse, and the 99th General Assembly and Governor have still not finalized a comprehensive budget for fiscal year 2016. And unfortunately, there is little progress to report today. Despite the lack of a state budget, an estimated 90% of state spending is already underway when various budget approvals, court orders, statutory mandates are considered. Specifically, this includes the budget for K-12, which has been approved for fiscal year 16. But there are other items, such as debt service payments continue to go out, pension payments are being made, and although official state budgets aren't in place for state agencies, state employees continue to be paid. With all of those things considered, again, I'll repeat it, about 90% of the state budget is in play. Higher education, however, is one of the small remaining pieces that is part of the other 10% that is still not accounted for next year. Earlier this week, Comptroller Munger announced that insufficient cash flow was preventing her from making some of the court-ordered mandated payments. She also announced that if the state continues to spend on its current trajectory, the estimated and projected budget deficit will be in the range of $4 to $5 billion by the end of the year. And later today, you will hear more about the FY16 university budget and the FY2017 budget development process from Vice President Phillips. This particular item provides an update on the budget development process as we've gone throughout the year, and also provides a few updates on some legislation that we've been tracking and that the university and our students remain interested in. Specifically, I think I would like to mention that last week on August 19th, the Illinois Senate approved Senate Bill 2043, which would provide $373 million to the Monetary Award Program, the MAP program. At NIU, this program helps and impacts almost 6,000 of our undergraduate students who receive about $20 million from the MAP program. This bill was placed on first reading by the House earlier this week. Because of the time it takes to wind its way through the House, this could take a couple of weeks before the House may approve this legislation. We are hoping the House approves the MAP appropriation, and we are hoping that the governor would sign it. Another thing I'd like to report on is that on August 19th, last week, the Senate voted to override the governor's veto of Senate Bill 1229. This legislation prevents the governor from locking out state workers during contract negotiations and also prevents workers from going on strike. In addition, if either the state or union declares an impasse in labor negotiations, the issue will be decided by binding arbitration. The House now has 15 days to either follow the Senate's lead and override the veto or take no action, and in which case the veto would stand. Another item I'd like to pick up to mention at least is on August 14th, the governor signed House Bill 3428 into law, which amends the College and Career Success for All Students Act, beginning with the year 2016-2017 academic year, scores of 3, 4, and 5 on the College Board Advanced Placement Exam shall be accepted for credit to satisfy degree requirements of public universities, which is a change from the previous 4, I believe, 4 and above.
Well, it was variable by, previously it was variable by discipline to give the students what the discipline thought was the best foundation.
So now initially this legislation was relatively harsh in its mandate. It was revised a couple of times. Now each institution shall determine for each test whether credit will be granted for electives, general education requirements, or major requirements, and the AP score is required to grant credit for those purposes. Finally, one bill that recently was introduced that we are going to track carefully. On August 12th, House Bill 4272 was introduced, and it doesn't apply to higher education. In fact, it has language that guarantees stability of funding to K-12 education. The piece of it that requires some careful consideration and monitoring is the piece that says that the legislation amends the Illinois Pension Code, and it changes the funding goal from 90% to 100%. But it also shifts certain costs accruing after July 1st, 2016 to employers. And this bill is on first reading in the House. It has long been suspected that since the pension Senate Bill 1 since the pension bill was struck down by the Supreme Court, that the as new developing plans on pension solutions are discussed, that a cost shift could occur for higher education as well as K-12. So this will be an interesting piece of legislation to keep an eye on. The last piece I'd like to mention, you've seen this table before, but if you could turn to the last page, table 1. I bring this to your attention just because I think it's a very powerful table. Starting at the far left, when you look at our NIU's original appropriation for FY 2015 of $93 million, that's where we started. Well, now it's last year, but that's where we started fiscal year 2015. And this chart shows a walk-up of what happened in FY 15. We suffered a 2.25% rescission, which reduced our appropriation to $91 million. The governor proposed a budget of $63 million, and the General Assembly then approved a budget of $85 million for NIU. The governor vetoed that legislation, and the General Assembly did not take further action on that, so that budget is, as of right now, is meaningless, is nothing, basically. But the point I guess I wanted to make is when you look at the $93 million for FY 2015, in FY 2002, our appropriation was $118 million. So we have suffered a $25 million decline in real dollar funding over that time period. So these draconian budget recommendations that we're facing this year are on top of 13 years of a steady, serious decline in funding. And I think with that wonderful point, I will stop and ask if anybody would like to raise any questions. Oh, and I would also like to mention that President Baker and I both have been extremely active in working with our various university groups and attending various meetings and subcommittee panel hearings and things like that. In fact, I don't know if President Baker would like to make a couple comments on what he's been up to. We had a meeting with the public university presidents and chancellors yesterday. Not a lot has been coming out of those meetings. We are trying to work with that group to come up with strategic ways to communicate with the leaders of the legislature and various policymakers to make our case and get something positive moving for higher education.
Before you go, let me just get some clarification. So we are $30 million less right now than compared to 2015, and we don't know the status.
At the governor's proposed level, it would be $30 million less, about 31.5% reduction.
Right, and the House had the Senate of the House had proposed a 85, right?
Correct. Correct. Yes. But
where are we on that? And governor has not, he vetoed it.
He vetoed it, and then
what's the next step?
Well, the next step was that the House and the Senate had a limited amount of time where they could attempt to override that veto, and that did not happen.
So
it's that General Assembly approved level budget is it's not even.
So we're at the 63 million level.
So we're back at 63, correct. That's the only thing officially on the books as of right now, is the governor's proposed budget.
Right. It's still that proposed, not approved. Right. But that doesn't sound very good.
No.
No matter how we look at it, even if we don't eat dinner tonight, it still doesn't help.
Right.
Any other question from the board? President Baker?
Thank you. Just a couple quick comments. Mike noted that we've dropped from 118 million in 2002. When you inflation adjust that number to today at the $93 million level, that's a 50% reduction in our purchasing power over that 12-year period. And it's quite a different narrative than we hear in the public about universities being lush or fat cats or whatever. It's quite the opposite. For all the faculty and staff and students, that are in this room or are listening. Clearly not the case. We've gone through tremendous budget reductions. We've gone through a lot of reorganization and a great deal of stress and strain to try and adapt to those, and we're going through program prioritization and other budget reduction exercises. So, in fact, we have significantly less resources. Even when you add the tuition increases that were added in to offset that, we're still $21 million less than we were in 2002. So we haven't used tuition to completely offset that. We've had to go through significant reductions. So it's the wrong narrative, and it's disturbing that it's in the public. In fact, it's not the case. And this board has done a great job the last 2 years holding tuition, room, and board fees flat or declining this year. So I thank the board for that. We're doing what we can to help the students maintain their affordability, but it is putting a lot of strain on the budget that we're going to have to adapt to. We're trying to show the positive impact higher education can have. I've talked with the Secretary of Education, Purvis, about this recently, and talked about the continuum from pre-K on through graduate education and career, and how our P20 network is trying to dovetail those pieces together and become a more efficient and effective system. And she resonated with that. And tomorrow I'm invited to the Task Force on the Future of the Workforce to be the luncheon speaker for them to talk about our innovative regional work in that regard. So I think there's a lot of interest in what we're doing and how we can be a solution. And we have to show them we are the solution to many of the state's problems, not the problem.
Trustee Coleman.
Two questions for you, Mike. I appreciate the insight on what's going on with Southern Illinois University. Why are they, I mean, they're getting almost twice the amount of revenue from the Illinois higher education budget versus what we're getting in there. I'm assuming they're not twice our size.
Well, that's a system total for them, so that would include Carbondale, Edwardsville, and their medical school in Springfield.
Okay, good. And that's the same for Illinois, I'm assuming.
Correct.
The University of Illinois. Where do you think this is headed from your perspective? Can you?
You're not doing too well on the positive thing, you know, but
just keep
trying.
In mind you're on the record, so.
I remain optimistic that we'll have a solution soon. But in Springfield, any optimism I would carry with me is zapped by legislative staff and others down there who see no end in sight. Literally, we used to hear things like, "Oh, it won't be until the end of the summer." Well, now we're hearing. And let me back up a little bit. We continue to receive a lot of legislative requests for information. Some of them are recycled. Some of them we've seen before. We dust off an email from May and forward it on. But sometimes you can tell what's happening by the types of requests you're getting. And now we are getting types of requests that are asking us to make comments on, and we're seeing the phrase, by the end of the year. What's the impact you will see at the end of the calendar year? We've had a couple late last week. So clearly the mentality is that, at least in Springfield, in the minds of many, is that there's nothing, there will be no solution found in the near term, which is not good news. Right now there doesn't seem to be a real clear pressure point on the General Assembly or governor to get something done immediately, because K-12 budget's passed, debt service payments are going out, state employees are being paid. Technically there's no budget in place, but things are kind of rolling along. And we are very hopeful right now that the MAP budget passes. We are crediting students' accounts. When the MAP issue came up in early August, we let folks know in Springfield that we felt very strongly about holding our students harmless during this budget impasse, our most vulnerable student population, and all of the universities are holding the students harmless and crediting their accounts for the MAP awards, even though at this time we are not sure when those payments will be received. So Trustee Coleman, I'm not sure if I answered your question or not, but it's a grim situation, and we're doing what we can to stay on top of it.
Thanks.
I think, Alan, you have a comment.
Just to echo some of Mike's comments, what a lot of people, I think, don't understand, even though bills are being paid, they're still $4 billion short. So the money is going out, but at the same level as last year, but it isn't there. They have enough funds to get them probably to about April, and then the state will be out of money and won't be able to pay anything. I think the pain level is going to have to get more acute before they address the problem. When you talk about getting to the end of the calendar year, that's about a half year. Our concern is that the longer that it takes to reach a resolution and possibly raise taxes in terms of offsetting the shortfalls, you get halfway through the year and then you only have a half a year that you can raise taxes without having to raise them very high, which means that they're about $4 billion short. So if they put something in place around the first of the year, there's even to offset the shortfalls, they're probably still going to be short about $2 billion. So even with a tax increase, we would still expect substantial cuts, and that's across the board to everything. So it sounds like they're paying all the bills. The problem is they're still $4 billion short, and they will run out of money well before the end of the fiscal year.
Thank you.
You know, that's,
that's
a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the issues that we have as an institution is if we don't receive funding, once again, we'll have a short time frame to make changes, and it may put us in a radical situation where we have less time to make significant cuts. And so at some point, we're going to, and maybe this is a budget discussion that we'll have a little later on, we're going to have to make some decisions as well. The sooner we make those decisions, maybe the less drastic our cuts will be as well.
Any other questions? I have two questions. Mike, is there anyone, and if so, who is the champion of higher education in the legislature? Or are they none? Are they just kind of being ostrich-like now?
Well, back in April or May, the IBHE worked with the institutions. We were part of the conversation. There is a higher education caucus, a group of legislators that have come together to legislators that are supportive of higher education, and there have been a couple of meetings of that caucus, and where there have been discussions about not only about support for higher education, but about the need for higher education to become more efficient I think the entire session, starting about the time when the governor proposed a 31.5% cut, a lot of the focus has been on higher ed to become more efficient and so there is a, I'm sorry, there is a group to. They're a champion of higher ed, but not much has come of it yet. And right now, the budget debate, the rank and file legislators, I'm not sure currently how much input they are having. This is a legislative leader conflict. This is the speaker and Senate president and the governor right now. And there aren't a lot of higher education champions. We have to champion for ourselves right now.
Yeah. And I just have one last question to the president. When you look at the state universities and you look at a scale of vulnerability, are we pretty all much in the same situation, or is someone worse than we are, or are we more vulnerable? What's your perspective on vulnerability? Because I see that the cuts pretty much across the board at everybody's getting the 8.6. But does that have a greater impact on one university over the other?
It does. A couple of the regional universities have already announced layoffs and furloughs, and we're not planning to do that under our current scenarios. So I think there are some that are significantly more vulnerable, and size tends to give you pools of resources, and so I would suspect the University of Illinois system has significantly more pooled resources to address the issue than would any of the other schools.
All right, well, you keep working on that good message, okay? You got another chance in November. So we have Dr. Quider, who will tell us about federal relations, and I'm not sure what her message is, but she certainly has been working diligently on behalf of the university in Washington, and let's hear from Dr. Quider.
Madam Chair, could I make a few comments?
Oh, yes, please, of course.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for hosting us earlier this week and encouraging us to work with the foundation to support research and innovation, and we're certainly working on that, and we thank you for your encouragement. Regarding our agenda today, I'd just like to say that one of the things we're working with in terms of the foundation is our trying to learn how to take advantage of it, is our broadband and healthcare initiatives. That came out of the outreach division and was headed by Lisa K. Bergeron, who's sitting in the audience here. So if the committee has any interest in getting some details, I hope Lisa will stay around and take their questions. There's a real opportunity there for us. Not only did it improve health care and offer opportunities in Northern Illinois, it's something we might leverage, and we're working with the foundation to do that. I'd like to start the rest of the talks by saying this is a good news story. I hope it'll be a little bit more uplifting than what you just heard. With respect to federal relations, and Dr. Quider, you can see there in the lower right-hand corner, we view this as in some sense, the end of our support, or the ultimate aspect of our support for the faculty, and she'll talk about how we're trying to engage faculty and build our programs. Here at home, our sponsored projects group is really supporting our researchers, and you'll hear more about that. I see Dara Little brought her team, and I hope you'll introduce them later on. And then finally, we have a great example of the strength of our research program, and Chairman Lurio from physics will be giving that presentation and not me. And he'll be giving an overview, and based on that overview, we can decide where we want to take this in-depth look into the physics department. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Quider.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. So I apologize if I look like I'm staring into the distance, because I'm actually looking at the window that's by our computer operators. So it's kind of strange to be looking, giving a talk to a window. But so apologize if I seem a bit staring in the distance. But thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you today, particularly for making the accommodations to allow me to do so through video. As you may know, I'm expecting my first child exactly 1 month from today, in fact, is the due date. So we have a new little husky that'll be on the way soon. And so today I'd like to provide you with an overview of what we've been doing in the Federal Relations Office for the past year, as well as introducing some of the ideas that we have to work on in the immediate future. And so just to recap from my presentation in November, my overarching goal for the Office of Federal Relations in Washington, D.C. is to be a bridge between DeKalb's campus, NIU writ large, and Washington, D.C. And this year, I'm proud to say that we've established a physical presence in Washington, D.C., which is our NIU office, which I'm currently sitting in. So you'll note on the image at the top of the screen, in the center is the United States Capitol Building. And on the far right is the little husky head. And that is actually the location of our office. So we're a 5-minute walk from the U.S. Capitol Building. We're also maybe a 3-minute walk from the Union Station Transportation Hub. So we're very well situated to physically act upon many of the strategies that I'll be discussing today. So our proactive federal engagement strategy really revolves around 4 key areas: leadership, collaboration, relationships, and communication. And today I'll be briefly discussing progress to date in each of these areas. And it certainly is no coincidence that I have put them on a circle in this image. And that's because I really see them as an interconnected whole. And at the end of my presentation, I'll be sharing a little bit of a case study on how we've been able to mobilize these 4 aspects of our engagement for a particular faculty member. So on the leadership front, for NIU, we're really looking to showcase NIU's strengths and build upon our existing credibility, authority, and trust within the Washington, D.C. circles. And so we've had a number of opportunities to do that this year. And as some examples of those, I have some images displayed here. So on the right, you'll see, and I apologize, the image quality isn't spectacular, but you'll see President Baker was actually invited with 3 of our regional partners to the White House for the 2nd College Opportunity Day of Action in December of 2014. While he was there, he was showcasing our regional P20 network, which was selected for participation in this conference because it is a national model of regional collaboration. And so you'll see in the image where the red arrow is, there's NIU's name with our P20 network, which was on the screen at this White House event. And President Baker, I'm sure he can speak to his experience, but from my understanding, it was a worthwhile connection with our peer institutions and others around the country on this topic. We've also been developing an outstanding relationship with Representative Adam Kinzinger, who represents the NIU DeKalb campus. And he has become quite a vocal and positive advocate for Northern Illinois University and our priorities in Washington. Some examples are, in December of this past year, he introduced a statement into the congressional record recognizing NIU's leadership on campus safety issues. And in fact, that statement also included a testimonial from our then Student Association president. So that was a great way to bring students into the federal policy process. And most recently, Congressman Kinzinger was on campus earlier this month to visit with our NIU student super mileage team from the engineering department. He also introduced a statement into the congressional record congratulating them on their success. And you can see there in the image, there's the congressman in the center with his congratulatory statement, along with 2 students from the team and Dean Vora from the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology. And one great thing that happened as a result of the congressman's visit is Rockford Television came out and covered it, and their coverage of the award ceremony and interaction with the congressman was actually picked up nationally by CNN News. So we're working to build collaborations throughout the Washington, D.C. ecosystem, and those collaborations will provide us with a platform for engaging more effectively in the national conversation on key issues for the NIU federal portfolio. They also provide us with the opportunity to build relationships with other like-minded organizations and our peer institutions throughout the state of Illinois, as well as national higher education and science and private sector partners. And so you'll see on the list here, we've participated in a number of coalitions so far. And I just wanted to highlight really a strong example of where this collaboration is positive for us. So you'll see in the image that Senator Durbin standing in front of the Science Coalition banner, which is an organization we're a member of. And through the Science Coalition, as an NIU, along with 4 of our Illinois peer institutions, successfully nominated Senator Durbin for the Champion of Science Award. and we were able to give him this award along with our peer institutions at the 1871 Incubator Space in Chicago, which highlighted NIU's commitment to innovation, as well as recognizing the senator for his strong advocacy on behalf of NIU priorities. And I particularly like this picture because NIU is nice and front and center in the presentation ceremony. Some other highlights we've had through the coalition work, we've participated through our faculty in two congressional briefings, and we've also co-signed over 10 letters to Congress expressing the university's priorities in many of these federal areas. Sort of the lifeblood of Washington, D.C. is relationships. And I view relationship management as building superhighways that can get us where we'd like to go, and they're the foundation of any strong advocacy effort and any strong policy outreach. And even though, you know, we're still developing as an institution strategic priorities, you know, we're going through a number of processes as an organization right now to do that, I believe that the relationships that we build can help us to get to taking advantage of those opportunities and really executing on our strategic goals as they come down the pipe. And so part of our cultivation of relationships is bringing members of Congress and their staff to our campus. And so since I entered NIU service last year, we've had 8 campus events with members of Congress or their staff. And so you can see the image in the upper left is Senator Durbin hosting a roundtable with President Baker and a number of students on student financial aid issues here at the NIU campus. We've also had a number of faculty visits and administrator visits to Washington, D.C., again, part of this reciprocity of engagement. And so through these faculty visits, we've brought faculty to visit with members of Congress, as well as a number of federal agencies and also national nonprofit advisory board organizations, such as the National Academies. And in fact, you'll see there in the bottom right, there's a picture of President Baker, myself, and Congressman Kinzinger. And this was taken in March when President Baker came out to work on appropriations advocacy for the university. And I would just note the chairwoman's remarks on the importance of funding to support our research enterprise. As a result of this meeting, Congressman Kinzinger actually signed on to a letter to the House Appropriations Committee requesting robust funding for the Department of Energy's Office of Science, which is an integral funder of NIU's participation in the national labs and part of our physics enterprise. So that's just one kind of outcome that can occur from this kind of relationship building. And finally, I would say on the relationship front, a strong part of our engagement strategy for our Washington, D.C. office is facilitating faculty service opportunities at the national level. And so the relationships that we're cultivating can lead to opportunities such as testifying before Congress or serving on federal advisory panels. And that not only raises the profile of the university and the individual researcher, but is an important part of a strong democracy and fostering a strong scientific and research enterprise. So finally, communications is key to keeping all the trains running on track together. And so I'm working across campus to present accurate, effective messaging to our campus community, and then to hear the priorities of campus and make sure that I'm delivering those messages back to Washington, D.C. in a timely, clear, and useful manner. And so this two-way communication is really essential to making sure that this outpost in Washington, D.C. is functioning optimally for campus. And so one thing that I've started this year is a weekly federal relations newsletter for NIU senior leadership. And this provides them with sort of the latest, current change regularly here in D.C. So it's the weekly state of play for the currents, often funding related, and then also opportunities for NIU to share our voice with national leaders on issues that are a priority for us. And I just wanted to end on this, to focus on this case study where Professor Chimarella participated in a blog, or participated in a activity through the Science Coalition, which is one of the the organizations that we participate in. And through the Science Coalition, he wrote a blog post that focused on his research in additive manufacturing. And you can see this is a screenshot of the blog post posting here on the left. And so he wrote this blog post about additive manufacturing. That has received over 1,000 views so far. And the quality of his post, as well as the interestingness of it, led him to be invited to participate in two congressional briefings on the importance of federal research investments for our nation. And from there, he also, while he was in town, visited with the Department of Commerce and the Department of Defense, as well as congressional offices. And in telling his story to those agencies and discussing with them NIU's priorities in engineering and specifically in advanced and additive manufacturing, he was then invited to a conference by the U.S. Navy to assist them with developing their fiscal year 2017 additive manufacturing research funding priorities. And so that was an excellent experience where NIU is now contributing to the development of the funding opportunities as opposed to chasing after them once they've been announced. So I thought that was a really great way to sort of show how our coalition participation and a focus on communications has led to potential positive outcomes on the funding side. And certainly NIU as an institution is really focused on including students in everything that we do. And so I'm working through the Office of Federal Relations to incorporate student career success and activating the triangle of students, the university, and the community throughout our federal engagement. And so the RIPS is working to bring interns into all of our offices. And to date, I have hosted two student interns. And so you'll see here a picture on the left is my student intern, Charles Moore, standing with Representative Davis from Illinois, who he was able to have lunch with when Charles was visiting with me in Washington, D.C. as part of his internship. And another strong example of our broadening of the student participation is last September, I had the opportunity to attend a conference on connecting the physics community with the private sector in Brazil. And I was able to bring four students with me. Two from physics and two from the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology. And so you'll see pictured there myself and the four students. And then one of those students I was able to facilitate for him the opportunity to write about his experience in a nationally distributed magazine for physics undergraduate students. And finally, with my own background as a scientist, I think it's very important that our undergraduate science students learn more about how they can be engaged in the policy process. And to that end, I've led two summer workshops for up to 50 NIU students in the summers about science policy. So those are just some examples of how I'm trying to incorporate students into the federal advocacy effort. So finally, looking forward, coming up in the queue, we have a few really exciting projects. The first is that we're working to develop what we're tentatively calling the Washington Fellows Program. And this will be, as Vice President Blasey mentioned, a capstone of our faculty development in RIPS. We'll be working with faculty to bring them to Washington, D.C. to meet with federal agency officials, both to learn more about the federal process and funding opportunities, but also to provide their expertise on shaping the direction of future funding calls throughout federal agencies. Of course, while they're in town, they would also meet with congressional representatives and other relevant federal officials. I'm also working with the Honors Program's the NIU Honors Program Director of Scholarships on facilitating student participation in the national scholarship programs that are out there. Myself, as a recipient of three national scholarships as an undergrad, I feel very strongly about the importance of making sure that our students are being showcased in this way on the national and often international stage. As much as I can. And certainly that would assist us with our federal advocacy efforts as well. On the federal agency front, one of the outcomes of Professor Shimarella's visits while he was in town is that the National Institute of Standard and Technology, which is part of the Department of Commerce, is now interested in looking into hosting a workshop on advanced manufacturing at Northern Illinois University in the spring. And so that, again, would be an excellent way of NIU demonstrating our national leadership on this, this important area of manufacturing. And finally, I just wanted to mention, as I had said in the beginning, my first little one is on the way in approximately a month if it arrives on time. And so the plan for handling our federal engagement while I'm out on leave will be that Vice President Blasey will be handling my portfolio and working, you know, across RIPS with our colleagues to ensure that any holes are covered. And I have been working with our federal officials, both on the congressional and the agency side, with our key contacts, so that they understand the timeline of my absence, as well as sort of the procedure for how to engage with NIU while I'm out. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I just wanted to end on this positive note. Sorry, Mike, but you know, thinking forward, I think that we have built some great. We have a good running head start to our federal engagement for the first year, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work across campus and across the federal government on behalf of the NIU community. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna, and warmest congratulations on the forthcoming birth of your baby. We want to hear all about it and send pictures, obviously.
Certainly.
Jerry, I would like to offer you an opportunity to make just a few comments about the transition. I'm so pleased that you were able to speak of the plan, and certainly Dr. Blasey came from NIU, went to Washington, knows Washington intimately, and we're so fortunate that he's back here on campus. And maybe you can talk a little bit about the transition.
Well, obviously, I can't replace Anna and her effort. She's a ball of fire, and you can see has made a huge difference for the university in Washington. So there will be something of a slowdown. Our priority will be to maintain contact with the legislative delegation and to continue to offer them opportunities to join us here at NIU and to take advantage of opportunities to join them in Washington. The STEM Fest is a great example of that. Anna and I are discussing strategies for involving the delegation along with Ann Kaplan and her crew. And that Anna is setting that up. It'll be in flight. Kathy Craddock and I will be responsible for the implementation here. With respect to the agencies, I think we'll be basically on hold until Anna gets back, because that really is intensive and requires a lot of time in Washington. Anna, would you just like to say a few things about STEM Fest? Because I think it'll be a highlight of the fall.
Yes, thank you. So STEM Fest has STEM education and STEM engagement has been something that we have identified as a real strong point of interest here in Washington, D.C. And in fact, there in the House of Representatives, there's a STEM Education Caucus, which is co-chaired by Representatives Dan Lipinski and Randy Holtgren, both from Illinois. So as I said, there's strong interest. We've been working with our colleagues in outreach to identify key congressional members to invite to STEM Fest. And we've had interest from Representatives Tammy Duckworth, Randy Holtgren, as well as Bill Foster in physically attending STEM Fest. Unfortunately, Congressman Kinzinger is unavailable that day, so he has expressed interest in doing something written to recognize the importance of STEM education and NIU's commitment to an excellence in STEM engagement. So we're working to see exactly what that written product could look like. It may take the form of a welcome letter or, you know, a statement for the congressional record or something along those lines. We'd also be looking for that written product to have the opportunity to have other members of Congress sign on as well.
Yeah, so I think I'll summarize. Our strategy is to maintain our momentum with the delegation, and the rest will go on hold until Anna returns.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Well, good luck to you. We'll see you soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Would you like to introduce Daryl Little and the discussions on sponsored projects?
Sure. Daryl Little is our newly appointed Assistant Vice President for Sponsored Projects, and she'll give an overview of how we've done in FY15, I personally consider this a highlight of our annual agenda, and so because she can review the success of the program. And she'll also talk a bit about some activities we've undertaken to improve research administration efficiency, and I credit Dara for being the inspiration and the driving force behind that.
Welcome. Well, thank you. I'm a little nervous, actually. Now I'm the first person here to have to take the podium, so. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to address the board this morning and to present our FY15 sponsored funding report. Since this is my first time addressing the board, I do want to just take a quick minute to tell you a little bit about who I am and to let you know that I have been in research administration for over 15 years. Prior to joining NIU in 2005, I worked in the central sponsored programs offices at the University of Minnesota and at the University of Illinois at Chicago. I received my MPA from NIU in 2013 with a focus on public management, and my research was in the area of organizational change and work design. I'm also a certified research administrator. So my talk this morning will include two parts. The first part will be an assessment of our FY15 funding activities. And the second part, as Jerry already mentioned, we'll look briefly at one of the things that we're doing in research administration to help facilitate external funding going forward. So you can see here that we finished FY15 just short of $30 million in total external funding. The spike in 2014 was due to a large State of Illinois award to build a statewide technology platform for P20 education. Excluding that award, you can also see that we've held fairly steady since 2012. But you can also see that the makeup of our funding is shifting and that research is becoming a larger portion of our total sponsored funding portfolio. The composition and the shift is due to a number of factors. One factor is changes that we've made over the last year in sponsored programs to how we classify external funds. So as a result, that did pull some projects that would have been reported previously under public service. Those projects are now being reported under research. An example is there's a longstanding, a large award that NIU has to provide R&D consulting to small manufacturing firms. In previous years, that award was identified under public service. That's now under research. Certainly, there's many other efforts underway at the university to support research and to increase external funding. We're also seeing that faculty who were hired 3 or 4 years ago with clear expectations for funding, they're beginning to hit with the agencies. We're also seeing that early career investigators who have received support through the Division of Research, through programs like the PI Academy, they're beginning to win their grants as well. And a final driving factor in the change in composition is that in the last few years, we had a number of large one-time service projects, so things like broadband, electronic health records, and specialized legal assistance. You can see here that the federal government, continues to be our largest source of funding. I think the fact that our funding has remained steady over the last few years at a time when federal discretionary funding and R&D investments have been declining is pretty good. The Department of Education, the Department of Commerce, Department of Energy, and National Science Foundation are our largest federal funders. Most of the state funding that's shown up here represents large intergovernmental agreements that we have with different state agencies to carry out state-mandated work. Some of these projects are for the provision of human services, large-scale data collection efforts, and P20 programs. And then the significant instruction, the red part of the bar, for the other sponsors represents internships, practicums, contract courses for public and private entities. So this slide is just a quick look at how this year's funding is has been split out between the colleges and other university divisions. As you can see, the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences brought in almost half of the funding this year. The College of Health and Human Sciences' share of funding increased from less than 1% last year to 3% this year. They brought in over $600,000 in research awards this year. The College of Engineering and Engineering Technology and College of Education are on par with 2014 levels. Okay. Facilities and administrative cost or overhead indirect cost cover the institutional expenses that are associated with carrying out our sponsored programs. It's important that we look at these because these costs not only support central facilities and administrative functions, but they can also provide seed funding for our research and faculty development programs that can lead to additional sponsored funding downstream. Our negotiated rate for research instruction that we negotiate with the federal government is 47%, and that's that blue line up at the top. And our effective rate, our actual recovery rate, is the red line, and you can see that that's hovering right around 15%. The effective rate will always be lower than our negotiated rate because there are certain budget line items that we're not allowed to calculate FNA cost on. And there are just some sponsors who refuse to pay indirect cost or they prohibit and will only reimburse at a lower rate, sometimes as low as 5 or 8%. But you can see that from where we were at in 2012, we are doing a better job at recovering these costs. The spending patterns will mimic, or the recovery patterns will mimic spending in any given year. Because again, we only recover the indirect cost as our grant funds are spent out. So it really is important that we in administration also monitor grant expenditure rates. This is something that we're looking closely at in the Division of Research, and we want to make sure that we're maximizing recovery without doing undue harm to our important sponsored programs. So before I segue into the next part of my talk, I do want to take a minute to mention some notable accomplishments by our faculty that I think really highlights the caliber of our research across our disciplines, as well as the accomplishments of our departments and colleges in supporting research and sponsored funding. Dr. Wendy Bostwick in Nursing and Health Studies secured the National Institutes of Health's first grant ever to study a particular topic. Securing the NIH's first grant to study something is an accomplishment in and of itself, but she secured her grant on her first attempt, and the institute that she received funding from has a success rate of about 19%. Dr. Joe Magliano received a 5-year grant from the research arm of the Department of Education that will bring together a multidisciplinary team of NIU and external partners. It's really worth noting here that receiving this award required 3 proposal submissions and multiple negotiations and clarifications with the sponsor to finally get to an award. Dr. Magliano's ability to strategically navigate those conversations with his agency program officer really paid off. The success rate for that particular program is less than 9%. And then finally, Dr. Mark Schuller received the National Science Foundation's most prestigious award, the Faculty Early Career Development Award, or the Career Award, that integrates outstanding research and education within the context of NIU. Funding rates for career awards range between 10 and 20%. Okay. So I'm going to segue now into the second part of my talk. But before I really get into the meat of it, I do want to talk briefly about the funding climate that research and sponsored programs is operating in. And this is a diagram that sort of shows that there's a number of factors that are impacting sponsored funding, and that any given time, these factors are overlapping with one another. So increasing administrative burden. A study by the Federal Demonstration Partnership found that principal investigators spend at least 42% of their research time managing the administrative requirements of doing research. This is certainly a burden that we're seeing here at NIU amongst our investigators as well as our sponsored program staff. Fewer federal dollars and greater competition. Since 2010, federal R&D investments and discretionary funding have gone down. Success rates in recent years with federal agencies hover anywhere between 10 and 30%. Put simply, there is less money to go around and there's more people fighting for it. New federal regulations. We're also in a very interesting time right now in that in the last year, the federal government completed a total overhaul of their grant regulations. And they moved all of them under one set of rules called the Uniform Guidance. I assure you there's nothing uniform about them, but we are very committed to helping faculty and staff navigate these new rules. But the reality is that they're onerous, and they do require significant interpretation. And finally, we're seeing more complex proposals and awards. Agencies are funding projects that can find solutions to complex problems, so we have more multi-investigator projects. An unintended consequence of this team science is that it does place additional burdens on sponsored programs offices. The demands can increase significantly when we're partnering with industry or international partners who may not understand the federal funding system or have the infrastructure in place to manage those funds. So with the increasing administrative burden coupled with competitive funding environment and shrinking university resources, we really needed to think differently about how sponsored programs supports external funding here at the university. And I know that's a little hard to read, but on May 1st, the Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships and the Division of Administration and Finance collaboratively announced the merger of NIU's two critical frontline offices, the Office of Sponsored Projects and Grants Fiscal Administration, to form Sponsored Programs Administration. Prior to the merger, Grants Fiscal Administration reported to the controller up to the Vice President for Administration and Finance. The Office of Sponsored Projects reported up to the Vice President for Research. In sponsored programs, functional areas are generally separated out by pre-award and post-award. And so the Office of Sponsored Projects provided pre-award support to faculty here, and that is support up until an award is received. Where Grants Fiscal Administration is our post-award office, providing support to faculty after an award has been received. The merger brings both of these areas of support under one unit. We're maintaining what's called a hybrid model, so staff will retain their area of expertise in either pre- and post-award, and both functional areas are overseen by an associate director. The associate directors are reporting up to me, where I report up to the Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, and I have a dotted reporting line to the Vice President for Administration and Finance. This is a fairly common shift, and a lot of universities are beginning to structure their sponsored programs this way. In just the last year, I have learned that Western Illinois, University of Chicago, and the University of Akron merged their offices. 3 weeks ago, my colleague at the Illinois Institute of Technology called me and said, "We're merging, please help." So it's definitely a shift. So when you keep that 42% metric in mind, the long-term goals of this merger are really to provide more convenient support for our faculty, both in planning and managing their sponsored awards. We need to find ways to streamline grants administration, identify administrative efficiencies, and enhance compliance throughout that sponsored program's life cycle. I really appreciate Dr. Blasey and Dr. Phillips' support thus far with the merger, and I look forward to working with them in the future on how we can address these goals. I would also emphasize that these goals are guiding other areas within the Division of Research, areas such as research compliance, to figure out how we can maintain the compliance that we need to maintain to do research, but to reduce that administrative burden. So I didn't put settling on a new office name, finding a mission, vision, goals as our short-term successes, but I do believe that they're short-term successes. But just in 4 months, our pre- and post-award staff are now using one electronic system to internally track workloads and monitor activity between our areas. We've taken another step towards improving communications between these areas, and we've leveraged existing software to enhance our post-award operations. Second, we've reduced an obvious redundancy between our pre- and post-award areas. Before the merger, both pre- and post-award sent out award notices to our investigators, which, as I understand, caused a bit of confusion with them. Our new process now has us sending out one notice of award. We've eliminated the use of an old access database in post-award, and we've gone completely electronic. And then finally, to offer additional convenience to our faculty and our investigators, our research development specialists and grant administrators will begin holding open forums on a regular basis across campus for faculty to drop by and basically ask any question or talk about any, you know, thing that they want with external funding, whether it's about preparing a proposal or managing an award. So sort of a will come to them, if you will, approach. And I do want to mention that the short-term successes would not have been possible without the core leadership team and sponsored programs administration. And so Kelly Dislin, the associate director over pre-award, is here, as is Craig Mulligan, associate director who's overseeing day-to-day post-award operations. And they've been really instrumental in helping us to achieve these short-term successes. They've done a lot of the hard work on the ground and really should be commended. And so the final thoughts, I guess, as I would wrap this presentation up, funding is holding steady, but the composition of our funding is changing. Support for research and sponsored funding is a shared responsibility across many university units. That support needs to be investigator-focused and compliance-centric. And the Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships and Sponsored Programs Administration within it is invested in identifying ways to reduce the administrative burden to increase research productivity. And with that, I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
The merger of the two areas, are there opportunities, even though people will still be dealing primarily with their areas of expertise, to do cross-training?
Absolutely. And this is something that we will be looking at in the long term. You know, right now the two areas are pretty specialized, and for a number of reasons, and that's important. But yes, we do see opportunities for cross-training, absolutely.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Did great on your first presentation to the board.
Thank you.
I think that what we should continue to remember is that what you described today was a way in which we're looking at cost containment through greater efficiencies. But what we really need to continue to really emphasize is that, and I probably am being very redundant this morning, but research is really at the essence of who we are as an institution. We are a research institution. And one of the things that we excel in at NIU is the opportunity that we give undergraduates to perform research projects. And as Dr. Blasey has indicated to me, that has impact on retention and on student success and on their response to the benefits of NIU on both the short-term and long-term basis. So research isn't just about funding, but it's a critical aspect. It is also who we are and what we do. And so the diversity of what we do is really important. And I think that we knew as we were moving into this, and that's why Dr. Quider became an important hire, is that we were moving from a political orientation to really a programmatic orientation through agencies as opposed to Congress with earmarks disappearing and discretionary funds disappearing. So this is a new dimension for us, and we thank you very much for all your efforts. Okay. So again, as I mentioned, one of the things that Dr. Friedman and I really wanted to work on as we were looking at the structure of the research committee is that we spent a little more time in depth on different areas. And as you recall, we did spend a great deal of time last year on the Center for the Study of Family Violence and Sexual Assault. We are moving into this year an orientation to the Department of Physics, and Dr. Larry Lurio, who is chair of the department, has some comments and will orient us to some of the new opportunities and successes that this department is bringing to the university. And what we'd like to do, what I'd like to do is keep the remarks probably about 10 minutes if we can. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the physics department research. So I'll wait till he gets the... if you can go on to the next slide, please. So I'm going to give an overview of the research program in the department. The research in our department is focused into mainly three areas. We do condensed matter physics, which is the study of the physics of materials and liquids and solids and things. We look at particle beams. And we look at high energy physics, and the particle beams program and the high energy physics program are very closely tied because obviously because you use high energy particle beams to study high energy physics. A unique aspect of the physics program is that we've very closely tied our research program with the research programs at the two nearby national laboratories, which are Argonne National Lab and Fermilab. In fact, of the 24 faculty we have in physics, 7 of them hold joint appointments with one of the two national laboratories. The annual funding for the research program typically fluctuates around $2 million. The current year's funding was about $2.3 million, and we're actually expecting, as I'll show later on, a significant increase for the next fiscal year's funding. So if you can go on to the next slide, please. The research in physics is also focused in two centers. There's the Institute for Nanoscience and Engineering Technology, which is a center which is focused on the study of materials, and in particular, the unique aspects of materials which occur when they're very small sizes down to a few tens of atoms. And I think I just had a conversation in the car this morning with our person teaching our nanoscience course who said, nanoscience is like if you take a piece of copper and you cut it in half, it's still a piece of copper. But if you keep repeating that longer and longer, eventually it doesn't act like copper. And that's sort of the interesting physics that we're trying to study with this Center for Nanoscience. And the second center is the Northern Illinois Center for Accelerator and Detector Development. And that center coordinates activities for high energy physics and for the development of accelerators to support high energy physics and the development of detectors to support high energy physics. And as we'll talk about later on, some of those technologies actually we're using to broaden out and look at industrial applications so that the technology used for the sort of esoteric high energy physics applications actually has a lot of interesting practical applications as well. So if I can go on to the next slide. So I just thought I'd talk a little bit about how the physics research program fits into the university's mission statement. I almost can skip this slide since Carolyn Muir gave a beautiful support of that in any case. But I really think that, our mission blends both research and education together. And I think this makes us a very good match, especially for these partnerships with the national laboratories, because they have beautiful equipment there, but they don't have students. And so by partnering with them, they have access to our students. Those students can not only help do the research at these national laboratories, but some of the technologies and training that they need to support those laboratories into the future are very specialized. And by partnering with the university, they can ensure that the next generation of people is there to keep those technologies and preserve them for the future. And I also think that we're in a unique position. The Chicago region has two of the nation's only 17 national laboratories. So this puts us in a great position if we leverage our high-tech concentration of national laboratories with the university's position in this region, we can really use that to create a national and international profile, and I'll actually show how we've done that as we go on. So if I go on to the next slide. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the highlights from the three different areas. The condensed matter physics program, I would say we have faculty who work in three different areas of developing new materials. We have some faculty who actually work on synthesizing new materials with unique properties, and I'll talk about two of those examples there. But in addition to creating something, you have to figure out what it is. And so this requires faculty who specialize in characterization. And one of the most unique aspects in the Chicago area is we have a X-ray source called the Advanced Photon Source, which is more powerful as an X-ray source than, let's say, the X-rays in your dentist's office by about a billion times. And so this allows us to do amazing things in terms of characterizing materials. And then once you know what you've got to make sense of it all. And we also have theoretical materials physicists who will then sort of close that circle. And between these three groups, we can really get a good understanding of what new materials are and where to point to in the future. And so two really exciting results in the past year. Professor Zili Zhao, who is also joint with Argonne National Laboratory, has been studying a phenomenon called giant magnetoresistance. Now, that may seem a bit obscure, but, for example, the materials that exhibit giant magnetoresistance are used in the very tip of the head that reads the hard drives in your computers. And so if those materials are improved, you can spin those hard drives faster and read your hard disk faster. And so if you're sitting there frustrated waiting for something to happen on a computer, realize that if you can improve a giant magnetoresistance, you can actually speed that process up. And Dr. Zhao's insight was, working with a group at Argonne, they discovered a new way to view the mechanism of how resistance is changed by magnetic fields. And this is really going to provide a new theoretical foundation for how to improve these kinds of materials. Another insight that came out from Dr. Bogdan Dabrowski's work, and I should say that both Dabrowski and Zhao are presidential research professors, is that he has been looking at materials which exhibit a phenomenon called superconductivity. And those are materials where if you put electric current through them, no energy is lost as heat whatsoever. And so, so these materials are phenomenally useful in principle, but the trouble is they have to be cooled to very low temperatures. In the late 1980s, it was discovered that you could make materials that almost went to room temperature, but not quite. You could make them superconductors at liquid nitrogen temperatures. And people have been trying to understand how that happened, and there actually is still no known mechanism for this. And so it was found that you could actually, he found insight into how these things work. And if this could happen, you could make all sorts of interesting electrical appliances that use high currents and don't lose any energy. So I'll go on to the next slide. The high energy physics program is centered at both, originally was centered at Fermi National Laboratory, and we still continue on work at Fermi National Laboratory. But in addition, we've also began a program that has started doing some work at the current highest energy accelerator, which is in Geneva in Switzerland. And so the work at Fermilab has now focused on using the original accelerator that had previously had the highest energy beam to provide very high intensity beams, and that allows us to look at very subtle phenomenon that may deviate from expected models of physics. And the picture you see on the right is actually a giant magnet that was moved from the National Laboratory in Long Island, Brookhaven National Laboratory, to Fermilab so that they could take advantage of Fermilab's higher flux to look for subtle changes to the properties of an elementary particle called a muon. And if you can go on to the next slide. We have two new faculty we've just hired in the past year in physics, Vishnu Zutsi and Jared Edelman. Vishnu is working on experiments tied to Fermilab, and Edelman is working on experiments that are going to be occurring at the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, Switzerland. In their first year as NIU faculty, they've actually already acquired over $1 million in external funding to support these two projects. But just to give you a sense of the scale, if you're good at these games, you can see a person on the left next to the MUTE experiment. That's that green sort of snaky thing. And there's also a person sort of buried which shows you the scale of the experiment going on in Geneva. All right, so if I can go on to the next slide, please. The BEAMS physics research, the president has just started a new initiative to pursue joint research in particle beams with Fermilab. We've hired a very prestigious new faculty member, Shapon Chattopadhyay, who was formerly the director of the Cockcroft Institute in England for particle accelerators. He has... in the past year, acquired a base grant to support all of our faculty in this area with $600,000 support. So I would say of our three new faculty that we've hired in high energy physics and beams, we've probably doubled the already significant research profile in that area. So if we can go on then next. And then I want to sort of conclude with a lot of this work is basic research, but in fact, we have also been doing applied research. There was a research program started as part of an initiative that NIU was going to go into proton therapy, and one thing that came out of that was the idea to design an imaging system that used protons, not just a treatment system that used protons. And the advantage of using the same particles and so I should say, the advantage of proton therapy is that when you try and treat cancers with radiation, the problem is that the radiation doesn't always just land where the cancer cells are. And the more accurately you can pinpoint where the radiation lands, the more radiation dose you can deliver to the cancer and the less damage you can do to the rest of the person. That's a great idea, and protons are particularly good at delivering the energy where you want them instead of just throughout the whole body. But that only works if you can accurately place things where you want it. So you can have pinpoint precision, but if it's the wrong place, it still doesn't help. And so an imaging system is just as important as a delivery system. What we've been using is a system that uses protons themselves to image the body, and by doing that, the alignment errors between the imaging technique and the treatment technique become significantly reduced. And this can then maybe, you know, right now I think radiation treatments has about a 70% success rate. I don't know if anyone really knows if that 30% is due to the fact that you don't put enough radiation in or that it doesn't work. It could go significantly better if these kinds of technologies really make a difference. And so I think if you go on, and so here's, we commissioned this detector in the last year. There's the team of smiling students and faculty down below who are all very happy that this thing worked. A graph on the right sort of shows that what we expected we got. And I think the sort of the most interesting slide is the next one. As you can see, is that we actually took a phantom head and you can image it with protons and you get a very beautiful image. This is not a real head, but a plastic head that's designed to look like a real head. It has a skull-like object. The funny hollow bit is where we put film to calibrate the dosimetry. I have to tell the story is that I didn't know much about this project about 2 years ago when the phantom head arrived from the manufacturer, and it happened to arrive on Halloween day. There's this box, phantom head. But it turned out that this was kind of working well. And I should also give credit to this is not just a physics issue. The computer science department has done a tremendous job of taking the algorithms to reduce the particles information to an actual image that previously took a few hours, which would make it impractical for imaging, to I think less than 6 minutes. And so then the last slide finally. So I just wanted to summarize, we have faculty in physics in three major areas, condensed matter physics, high energy physics, and beams. We have had three hires in the recent year, and I have to say that I've never seen a situation where three new hires have all achieved funding at over $500,000 a year each, which is just a phenomenal level of funding and success. I'm really impressed with these new people. We have recently completed another high-profile hire. We've sort of stolen a good particle beams physicist from Michigan State University, and he actually just accepted our offer earlier this week. And so I think with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Okay. you. Thank you very much. You know, one of the things we try and do in this committee is there are three major areas that we focus upon: state and federal legislation, and then we really want to focus specifically on areas of research, and that's why we brought physics today. At this meeting, we spend a little more time on state legislation simply because we usually ask Mr. Mann to go more quickly. And I think given the importance of this, we took our time today to really orient ourselves to state legislation and positioning, as well as where we were on a federal level, in particular because Dr. Quieter is going on maternity leave. But I do want to say that the focus of this committee will be for the next several meetings on what is happening, in particular in the hard sciences, since we started with the social sciences. And we want to talk more about the activities at Fermilab as we move forward and as your faculty start to really embed themselves at NIU. I think the Proton, many of us on the board, are very, very knowledgeable about Proton, and it became a major focus for this university. What we had planned did not come to pass, but I think we have greatly benefited from the activities that we engaged in, and I think that bringing the new dimension of diagnostics with the treatment processes of Proton is another area that we really should continue to talk about. And I just want to wrap this up by simply saying that it's not, these discussions are not simply ethereal. We talked this morning in academic affairs about cost of healthcare and how to look at cost containment. Well, if we can better diagnose and if we can better treat and if we can use preventative measures that are identified often by our physicists or our biologists or our chemists, then we may see in the long run, in the next decade or so, means by which we can contain healthcare by not providing the extensive care delivery, but the identification and diagnostically identifying sooner, which means that we might be able to find cures sooner. So it has a real meaningful and practical and pragmatic application into day-to-day life, and we want to take the research aspects out of the ethereal and really start to talk about how our basic, applied, and empirical research utilized in making this a better world. So, Bob?
A curious question.
Yes.
Our success in attracting three, obviously, very reputable researchers, how do you explain that?
Well, I would have to say that the high energy physics group, which was originally started, I guess, by Jerry Blasey and Dave Hedin, the senior faculty have done a tremendous job of trying to cultivate the next generation of scientists there.
So our reputation is spreading out there.
I think it is a reputation, but I also think that, you know, we have some very good senior scientists in that program, but not all good senior scientists take responsibility for looking after the next generation, and these guys have done a great job of doing that. So I really credit the senior people who created the NICAD Center, who got it going, have really been looking out for the future, and have made sure that we brought new people in who were going to be excellent quality.
That's great. Thank you. Jerry, thank you too.
Thank you. Any other matters that require the attention of this committee? Yes, John?
Thank you, Sherilyn, for maintaining the integrity of the committee's agenda. This was an outstanding meeting, and I think it really shows the value of putting together the subject matters that we have as a board in this particular committee, and I want to commend the chairman of the Department of Physics for an excellent presentation. I have a funny feeling that it's not entirely common for the chair of a department to have as much intimate knowledge of the research of his or her faculty colleagues as you do. And I'll leave here today really understanding in a very clear way what your department's doing. Thank you for that.
Thank you, John. Yes, please.
I'd just like to point out that that PCT program, it was a, I'd like to stress, it was a joint program between physics and computer science, and much of the intellectual advance in that program came out of computer science, and I'd like to recognize Nick Koronis, the chair of the computer science department, who led that part of the effort.
Thank you. And Jerry and I will work on the next agenda so that we can continue on with this and perhaps, again, talk more about the collaboration, interdepartmental collaboration to achieve a common goal. So in light of that, the next committee meeting will be Thursday, November 12th at 9 a.m. May I have a motion to adjourn? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much.